You're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Unleash the geek in you.
This is a crossover between Geekcast Radio and Studio 2009 here on the Geekcast Radio Network. I am TFG and Mike. Studio 2009 has not had an episode in a couple of months. Geekcast Radio, we are continuing on down our geeky talking and other things. So with Studio 2009, we cover anything and everything in the audiovisual medium. If you can hear it, if you can watch it, if you can read it, if you can whatever it, it'll be covered on this podcast. Joining me is longtime friend, and I've only actually spent 5.5 hours with her podcasting since 2017. We've only done 2 episodes together. Back when I had remote control, we did a take 5 on This Is Us, which I think after season 2, I stopped watching that show.
Same. It's not that it got bad. I was in an emotional place, and that show is a lot.
That show is emotionally draining is what that show is.
Yeah.
And then we came back and somehow we talked for, like I said, so the This Is Us show was probably 1 hour and 15 minutes. The next show she was on was episode 40 of Remote Control, where we talked about the broadcast television networks, and we talked for like 4.5 hours. I don't know how that happened, but it is Mrs. Jennifer Kaufman. Hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing good. Since we last podcasted together, I've created 2 humans. Yeah, 2 little humans. And I think that sort of leads into why I'm here, is because I have I've suddenly been, you know, mostly against my will, thrust into the world of current children's television, because little humans like to watch TV just as much as big humans, and lots of people are making stuff just for them that I have a lot of opinions on.
This originally started out as, I believe it was one of your Facebook posts, and I don't know, I remember you usually when I see a Facebook post and I'll be like, interesting. And usually part of my comment will be, oh, this and this about whatever the post is. And I'll say, hey, if you want to do a podcast about it, let me know. And I think that's why we're here, is because of whichever Paw Patrol enraging post that you were making.
And there probably have been several. I have probably posted several lengthy Facebook rants about my dislike of Paw Patrol. Yeah, so that makes sense.
So for me, I had never watched the series. I do not have children. Sadly, my wife passed away 2 years ago this November, and I've never had the interest in having my own little humans because of my cerebral palsy disability. The last thing I want is to, you know, bring somebody into this world that has more problems than I had 40 years ago because of how today's society is and whatever else. But I grew up, obviously. I was a kid at one point or another. Obviously, I watched children's television programming when I was younger. And that's kind of where this is going to end up, close to the end of the podcast. But Jen wanted to talk about Paw Patrol. And I watched a couple of clips and episodes. And first of all, I can't believe that show has 231 episodes and multiple movies.
Yep.
My brain just like fried egg. This is your brain. This is your brain on Paw Patrol.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, before I even watched it, I had this conception of it that it was the kind of show I didn't want my kid to watch. I had lofty notions, man. I was going to just let my kid only watch classic Sesame Street. There's a couple of collections you can buy on iTunes, and they have, you know, lots of YouTube clips and, you know, sort of pirated YouTube episodes. And that was how I started. It was like classic Sesame Street, kind of expanded to allow some modern Thomas the Train, which is not too bad. And I saw Paw Patrol as like this threshold that once I crossed it, there was no turning back. And you know, my son saw the picture on Netflix, and my husband was like, "Eh, what's the big deal? Let him watch Paw Patrol." And I was like, "This will be the end. This will be the end of everything." And I was right, because it sort of, as soon as he started watching Paw Patrol, it took him down this path of like all of these very similar modern shows that I just think are really stupid and are doing a disservice to children. And, you know, like when you say, yeah, I can't believe the show has 230 episodes, I can believe it, because honestly, it's like a show designed to attract children, but not in the same way that, you know, let's say Sesame Street was, which was Sesame Street was developed by, and I guess we can probably agree that Sesame Street is like the pinnacle of children's television.
Oh, of course. Yeah, hands right? down.
It was developed by educators and comedy writers together, along with all of these other groups, psychologists. Like, they brought together this crazy team back when people cared about public television to create this show. And of course, they wanted to have tricks and tips to attract children, because you got to get the kids to watch. But the underlying goal was always like, how can we teach kids? How can we close this learning gap, particularly between their main interest was between was for underprivileged children in urban neighborhoods. They really wanted to get those people up to speed when they started, you know, kindergarten, grade school, that type of thing. So it was how they could best get the information that children needed and entertain them at the same time. And I think they did a fantastic job. But, you know, Paw Patrol is kind of like the inverse of that, where it's like, how can we make this crack for children? And there's not really any thought to if it's good for children. But really, like, children love puppies, right? Like, that's the thing. Children love dogs. And then you're mm-hmm. making dogs rescue people. And to me, it's like the simplest concept that I can understand 100% why every kid wants to watch a bunch of cute dogs rescue people. And it sells a ton of toys. It lends itself perfectly to marketing. So it's the perfect concept kind of baked into it. I don't know if you want to hear, I mean, you watch some of it. Do you want like a brief overview of Buff? Do you want it, or sure. Are you willing to take it, I guess, is the point.
That's what she said.
Right. So Paw Patrol is actually Canadian, where I'm from. And we apologize, because normally Canada's not the source of the worst things to happen on television. But
yeah. I don't know. You might want to talk to all those Nickelback haters.
I said on television, man. I said on television. We do take responsibility for Nickelback. Yeah. But, you know, we're kind of usually below the radar. We don't usually cause that much trouble. But we did Paw Patrol. And like I said, the concept is really simple. It was a bunch of dogs, five dogs. It is four male dogs and one female dog, because that is also how the world works. You just got to throw in that one female. Mm-hmm. So you're not sexist. Even though the world is 50-50, it's, you know, one out of five in dog world. And they live in this place called Adventure Bay, and they have this teenage boss who sends them on missions to rescue people. And that in itself is not the end of the world, right? But what I find really weird about this show, and very silly, and you may have noticed this as you sort of looked into it, is that it progressed into insanity very quickly.
Yeah.
Like, again, these were dogs rescuing people. You know, when you create a show, you set up a world, and you obviously you're supposed to suspend your disbelief. Hey, dogs can talk and they're rescuing people. Not that over the top, right? That's the basis of the world, and we all buy into that. So they did things in the first season like fixed a lighthouse, rescued kittens, you know, rescue the mayor's pet chicken. Why the mayor has a pet chicken? That's a whole other podcast. I don't know. Her name, I don't want to misgender the chicken. Her name is Chicoletta. So that's, you know,
I saw her nearly get brought by a giant purple metal dinosaur.
Right.
If that's not Canada shoving something up another dinosaur's butt, I don't know what is.
And you have summed that up, because if you're listening, you're like, wait, why are there dinosaurs? And that is the problem, man, because again, at first they're doing these little things around town that you would imagine would be in a world where you're, you know, rescuing people in a small town, you'd be doing these things. And then it gets to season two and they start to like expand this world where you have not, this has not been the premise, you know, where suddenly there are space aliens and merpups, and then there are dinosaurs, and then there a meteor crashes and all the dogs get superpowers. And it's like this progression of like, there are no rules in this world. Like, you know what I mean? Like you buy into an idea and then they could just throw whatever they want at it and be like, well, now there's dogs that are half mermaids. So that's a thing. And you're like, why? And obviously the answer is to sell more toys. But I think the problem is you need to set up, you should set up a world and build it properly so that everything that happens within that world feels plausible to the world. I'm not saying you can't have mermaid dogs. That's fine. You can have a whole show about mermaid dogs, but they shouldn't come out of nowhere. We should go into it knowing this is a world in which mermaid dogs exist, or at least magic, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and all I can think in my head is they just want to be a part of our world.
So that's the first issue that I have with shows like this, is that they don't, there's no narrative consistency. There's no proper world building. It's just like, oh, well, we can just do whatever and constantly create new things that don't make any sense or have never been established, which Paw Patrol is the king of, right? They just keep creating these offshoots, the Mighty Pups or the superpower when they get superpowers. Like, I think you may have watched a dino rescue episode, it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's
they have the super backpacks or whatever, the jet packs and all that. And I'm looking, so on Wikipedia, which we all know, folks, Wikipedia is the end all be all, not really, but I'm looking at all of the characters, and yes, you are correct. The main dog pack, there really is only one female member, but there are other female characters in this series as it goes along.
Well, there are two honorary, as far as I know, look, don't quote me on this, but there may be more than two, but there is at least two honorary members of the Paw Patrol who show up, not all the time, but in a lot of episodes. One is a girl dog named Everest. And if I had to pick, she would be my favorite. I mean, okay. It's a low bar, but she's a snow dog.
Right.
And,
yep.
And then there is a dog, Tracker, I believe his name is. I think it's something to do with the woods and maybe the outback, which again doesn't make any sense. Why are they in the outback? So they have these other dogs that come in and out. There's actually now a cat pack that they work with.
Yes, there's a cat pack. And
yeah, well, there's two cat packs. There's an evil cat pack called the Kitty Catastrophe Crew, and then there's
I saw that as I'm looking through these characters. Talking about Tracker really quick, and you said you don't know why Australian. It says that he is a he serves as a jungle rescue pup. So I guess if the Paw Patrol is like worldwide, the Australian jungle, I guess, maybe, who knows?
Sure. But it's like, we have no idea where Adventure Bay is. It kind of seems like some like New England town, right? There's like a captain of a boat and all this stuff. And then they suddenly are just like in the jungle, and they don't like fly there. They just walk next door in the jungle. And it's kind of like, I don't know if you ever watched Lost, but it's like how in the beginning they were very careful about how long it took to get everywhere on the island. And by the final season, they're like, we're just going to walk next door to this thing that took us like 8 hours to get to. That's what this is like. It's like there's no sense of like where this is and, you know, why are they next door to a jungle? Like that's, you know. So, yeah, the nonsensicalness of it is something that really bugs me. And the other thing is that it's really representative of shows now that are aimed, I mean, these shows, Paw Patrol for sure, and some of these other shows that are similar to Paw Patrol, shows like PJ Masks, Action Pack. These are also kind of like rescue shows. I think Disney Plus has Spidey and Friends, which is obviously based on Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. All of these shows are sort of aimed at like a preschool to kindergarten audience.
Yeah.
But they feature rescues and they feature light lessons like be nice to people and all this kind of thing. But they also feature these like really dumb villains. And every episode, these packs of rescue people, whether it's dogs or Spidey friends, they have to stop these villains with these really simple nefarious plans from causing chaos. And I just think that villains shouldn't play a role in children's television. I think it's I think it's kind of damaging. Like I notice when my kids watch shows with villains, well, I should say my kid, I have a toddler and he doesn't know what's happening. But my preschooler who's four now, he kind of turns into a bit of a jerk, right? Like everything's about defeating people and like, you won't get away with this, you know, like it's kind of a bad energy to have in children's television.
It is, but I will ask you this question.
Okay.
What is an easier way to teach a child of preschool age the difference between good and bad, or good and evil, or good, like being able to teach them how to do good versus this is what you're not supposed to do kind of thing? Isn't having a hero and a villain, or a good guy and a bad guy, the easiest way to teach them that? Again, I don't know. I'm not a parent. So
I am so glad you asked that. That is such a good question. First of all, I don't think we do teach children the simplicity of a world that's good or bad. I think that is a mistake in and of itself. And that's part of the reason is like, you know, my son will refer to kids in his class. He's like, oh, he hits. He's the bad guy. And I'm like, honey, that kid is not a bad person. That kid maybe has a problem hitting and maybe we need to figure out why he's hitting or work with him or whatever. But, you know, there is no good and bad in our world. I mean, look, I'm sure there are people that we all feel like are cartoonish villains in the real world. But for the most part, you live in a world of grays and people contain multitudes. And so what you really want to teach kids is how to be a good person and how to interact with difficult personalities, how to say no to things that they maybe shouldn't be doing. But you don't need villains to do that, especially really one-note cartoonish style villains. And the main antagonist in Paw Patrol is Mayor Humdinger. And he's literally a mustache twirler. He has a top hat. He's got one of those like tie you to the railroad tracks in the 1930s mustaches. And he's just constantly causing ridiculous trouble for like no good reason. I don't even know what his goal is. Like, what is his goal? To be a powerful mayor? I don't know. It's weird. And I think that when you simplify that for kids, that it creates this energy where, yeah, good guys versus bad guys that I don't think is really useful for children. And I think there are so many other ways to do it.
Go back inside and chase out those bees. Fine. Then I'll just have to call the Paw Patrol.
It's working! Follow the honey, little bear!
That worked out great, Rocky! Mayor Humdinger? We were just on our way to see you.
Then hurry! My lair is full of bees!
Let's buzz on over, pups.
There are so many fantastic shows that teach kids lessons in a different way, which I don't know if we want to get into that now or later, but there are certainly tons of these. And they're still high octane. They're still adventure. They're still often rescue series, because I think kids these days are... it's harder for them to watch the slower stuff that we watched as a kid. I mean, you know, try to sit a kid in front of Mr. Rogers, and I'm not saying it's a good thing that they can't sit through it, but our world moves at a slightly different pace. And it is a lot harder for, you know, my kids to sit through Mr. Rogers than it would be for you or I, right?
Yeah, because again, we grew up in a generation without the internet, without all this instantaneous, like you can, you know, legally or illegally, you can have most content just by clicking a few buttons on your mouse or a few links on your computer, or touching a few buttons on whichever iDevice or whatever you want to use for technology. Whereas 40 years ago, we didn't have any of that. We had three channels and a knob with some metal antenna. Try to teach a kid today how to use a television antenna. I dare you. Like, seriously.
I don't want to do it. Honestly, I didn't even know how to use my television. That was slightly before, like, we had a TV with antennas maybe for a little bit, and I didn't interact with it. So that's not part of my world either.
Like, you're right. Okay, I understand it's not part of your world, but oh man, so many Disney vibes. But point is the generation that we grew up in with, yes, we had computers at school and stuff, and some of us may have been lucky to have home computers, but that was like a new thing back then. Whereas nowadays in 2023, computers and tablets and phones and this and that and everything is a screen kind of thing. Like the learning, the way we learned 40 years ago is very different than the way that the learning is going on now.
It's true. It's true. And you know, how much of it, though, I wonder, starts at an early age and is because they're exposed to things that are different. Like, you know, I truly believe that my son was happy watching classic episodes of Sesame Street, which, by the way, at the time was considered very fast paced. In fact, Mr. Rogers initially had an issue with Sesame Street because he didn't like how it was like all these quick cuts to these different segments, right? Like he wanted to, Mr. Rogers really wanted kids to feel the real movement of time, which, I mean, when you watch it, it's like if he's cutting a piece of paper, he just cuts the paper and you just watch the amount of time it takes him to cut that paper. That's it. But my son, I believe, was really happy watching that. But as soon as he started to get a taste of some of these other shows, going back to watch that, it's like his brain had been rewired to be like, this is too slow. You know, this has too much talking. This doesn't have enough action. Yeah. And suddenly, you know, he's in a different space. So part of me wonders, you know, how much, look, you can't control the world. You can't change the world. So obviously, eventually, everybody is going to be in a space where they see and interact with everything around them, which for the most part is very fast paced. But, you know, when we're making these shows for kids, how much influence could we have, I should say, if we made these shows to help them adjust to the world and learn things in maybe a different way before we kind of throw them into the MTV-ness of it all? You know what I mean? This fast-paced, high-octane world. I don't know. Yeah. It's just a thought because I really do see the difference. Once they see what's out there, it's suddenly like, oh, okay, well, if there are no lasers, you know, I'm not into this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just such a interesting evolution of children's television programming between, as I've mentioned, 40 years ago to today, because without looking it back up, I think Sesame Street was 30 minutes. Mr. Rogers was 30 minutes. Maybe they used to have hour.
Sesame Street was an hour.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So an hour in 1986, when I was 6 years old, watching Sesame Street felt, even with the jump cuts and the quick cuts as you know, whatever, it still felt like I was learning for a full hour or longer because of how, not necessarily they drew the lesson out, but how the show was paced at the time of being this thing of, we want your child to sit here for an hour in the morning every day at whatever, before school, obviously, kind of thing. And I think the only time as a kid in the 80s, the only time I felt Sesame Street was super slow, and I don't even know if I can find this on YouTube, there was a segment that they did where they were trying to teach us or show us the ways many different people slept. It was a sleeping segment. And it was showing people like tossing and turning in beds, sleeping out, you know, like camping out in the middle of nowhere with tents. It was all this stuff about sleeping. And this segment was so slow. And as a 6 year old who was running around, like, you know, by that point, I was all into Transformers and He-Man and Voltron. And I'm like, Sesame Street, come on, just show me Bert and Ernie and get it over with already.
Well, yeah, you know, and over the years, like Sesame Street was originally more about the adults on the street than it was about the Muppets. The Muppets were, well, the Muppets were a huge part of it. But it was, they wanted you to be with the people in your neighborhood, you know, mm-hmm. who are the people in your neighborhood, that kind of thing. And So if you watch some of those really early episodes, you know, like Gordon, Susan, Bob, you would kind of, they would be your anchors. And then you would have, they would interact with the Muppets as if they were children. They would interact with the, some of the children who were on the show. Mm-hmm. And there would be these stories that were just about the adults getting like locked out of their building when they were, there was a whole episode where they went up on the roof to do some yoga or running or something. I can't remember. And Big Bird locked the door and it started to rain and they were stuck up there. And of course you have, that was the ongoing story throughout the episode as they cut to all the Muppet segments and those little animated interstitials and all of that stuff that Sesame Street is known for. And at Sesame Street, progressed, it became less anchored in the adults and more anchored in the Muppets. And really, that's not necessarily a bad thing, except for that if you watch the history, it often hinges around the Elmification of Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. It's whether or not you think Elmo is the evil turning point, which I kind of do, because, you know, he was sort of the point of view of a toddler and he kind of took Sesame Street a little bit younger even than it was, and he became like the eyes that you would see it through instead of kind of like a more mature or more of like these friendly adults who were leading you through life. So even Sesame Street itself has changed so much, you know.
I liked about it was that you had, like, even back then as a kid, you had kid characters, you had adult, like, look, Big Bird may be the tallest Sesame Street character, but there were times where Big Bird was very much, you know, you always talk about the kid inside of us kind of thing. He was very much an 8-year-old certain points in time. But with Elmo specifically, I think because Elmo was a shorter Muppet, he was very childlike looking as far as his design and the way he acted. And that's perfectly fine. You need to, the whole point of the show is to teach kids how to learn lessons. And you need to, again, we always talk about in geek culture now, how like we relate to certain characters of whatever, insert whatever show you want to. Whatever, you know what I mean? But like, yeah, it was always that. That's what is interesting about classic Sesame Street. Like I said, I know practically nothing. I know, I already mentioned the one thing I know about Sesame Street, which was the most recent Marques Brownlee clip. The only other thing I know is Sesame Street, it's a game of chairs. And they go through and they do a Game of Thrones parody with musical chair. It's amazing if you haven't seen it.
See, no, I haven't seen that. I really haven't seen a ton of modern Sesame Street. But actually Big Bird was supposed to be Big Bird was initially sort of the age of what the viewers were supposed to be. So he was supposed to become like a 5-6-year-old kid, really, in the way he interacted. And you see that there's that famous episode of Sesame Street that I'm sure you've heard of, which I didn't watch at the time because it was before my time, but I've watched it since, where Mr. Hooper dies because the actor who played Mr. Hooper had died. And the way that they addressed it was, he simply wasn't there and Big Bird drew him a picture and he said, I want to give this to Mr. Hooper. You know, I got to go see him. And they said, Big Bird, don't you remember? We told you that Mr. Hooper died. And he didn't understand what that was still. And they had to kind of explain to him, well, he's not coming back. Yeah. And it's, you know, that's sad. And you have your memories of him, but you're not going to see him again. And it was so straightforward, but empathetic and kind and the absolute pinnacle of how you would want to talk to children and interact with them. And that was just, you know, one of the things that they did. And yeah, so, I mean, it's changed a lot over the years. And now it's only like a half hour thing that they show once a week or so. And it's basically all Muppets. There's no humans. And it's really like Elmo and that weird fairy that they invented, Abby Cadabby or whatever.
Well, and there are still, like I said, trust me, Marques Brownlee is not a human. He is a human, but I mean, there are still humans. But you're right; most of it is the child Muppet characters interacting with each other.
Well, and with guest stars, right?
Like
they do the guest stars, but they don't have like those anchoring characters on the street. You know. Yeah. Also, Sesame Street was originally a dirty, not I shouldn't say dirty. It was intended to look like an inner city neighborhood. It had a regular look. It had, you know, slightly grungy feel, slightly like there were trash cans. You had a grouch and a trash can.
I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be I don't want to say a street in Brooklyn or the Bronx, but it was supposed to be a street in New York somewhere.
Originally. Yeah, it was supposed to look like that kind of environment, and it did. And if you watch it over the years, sort of around like the early 90s and then continuing, it was completely beautified. Like all of a sudden it didn't look like that street anymore. And there was actually a warning on the first season DVD of Sesame Street when it came out, when DVDs were still a thing. There was a warning that said it's not appropriate for children.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm getting that right. I would have to look it up, but I remember reading it at the time, and it had to do with Parents Television Council, I believe, complaining that, it was gritty. It was too gritty for children, that it wasn't appropriate. Which is exactly, you know, what's wrong with the world. Because it was designed for children. It spoke to real children, but we're at a place now where anything negative, anything that I don't even want to say negative, but anything that was too realistic to, you know, like they were like, there's graffiti everywhere. Yeah. I mean, that's the world, man. Right.
Absolutely. All right. Where else do we want to go with children's programming?
Well, I think we were talking about it earlier, but it's interesting to think about whether or not when we're comparing stuff like Paw Patrol and, you know, Action Packed, which is, you know, kind of the same thing, but like humans who, you know, rescue people in weird ways and have powers, PJ Masks, all that stuff. If we're comparing those shows to Sesame Street, they're obviously they don't stand up.
Mm-hmm.
But I was talking to people about the fact that I was doing this podcast, and a lot of them were like, yeah, but you know, when I was that age, I watched Care Bears or I watched Transformers or She-Ra or any of these shows. And you know, it's interesting because I know those weren't, there definitely were kids shows in the sense that they were not for parents, but I don't think they were aimed at 5-year-olds. And you know, some 5-year-olds were probably watching them, but I think the difference to me is that these shows like Paw Patrol are designed and aimed at 5-year-olds versus.
Yeah.
Now, what would your thoughts on that be?
I mean, if it's designed and aimed at kids to be able to teach them something, like if they're using it as a learning tool, fine. Okay. If they're using it for anything else, well, then there must be something wrong.
Yeah, I think it's hard because Care Bears is the closest thing I can think of. And I don't have very strong memories of Care Bears. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my friend was saying, well, they always had these lessons and they would say, you know, you have to care about this and, you know, be kind to others. And that, so that may have been something that was intended for a younger audience, maybe as young as 5. But of course, Care Bears did also have that same villain kind of, that villain, I think his name was No Heart, and he had this beastly kind of assistant kind of guy. Very thin memories of this. But honestly, even that seems a little more intelligent because it's also a metaphor, right? The Care Bears are these bears who have all of these feelings and who care about people in the world. And then you've got this villain who is anti-emotion, anti-caring, right? That's actually, despite the fact that we're talking about a really simple good versus evil dichotomy, it's a little bit of a clever metaphor in a way. Whereas with something like Paw Patrol, I mean, what are you really teaching people? That it's good to rescue people? I mean, sure. But, you know, like the villains don't have anything interesting about them. They don't have something metaphorical, right?
I mean, the only thing about Mayor Humdinger that I can see that makes him an evil villain is that he has the name Humdinger, because that's just an evil word, and it's not, but it just Mr. Mayor Humdinger is gonna get you. Whatever.
Well, that's it. He just, like, for no reason, he just wants to cause trouble.
Yeah. I think it's because, so remind me, because I've only seen like a handful of these clips in the last 8 hours of my life. So there's a mayor of one town, and then there's the mayor Humdinger, who's the mayor of an opposing town, correct?
I think so, but to be honest, it's not always super clear to me. Like, because what is he always doing in their town? Like, I am a little bit confused, and I don't really know. I don't know what his goal is. I don't really know what he's up to. You know, I mean, yeah. And I will admit that, like, you know, I'm watching this from the perspective of a parent where, you know, I have sat through many episodes unwillingly, but I've also, the more common scenario is that I'm in the middle of doing something and I stop and I'm like, what in the world is happening right now? And then I go back to folding the laundry. And so some of it, you know, I did my own research for this, because I was like, look, I have to understand how this ended up the way that it ended up. So I kind of looked up season by season, again, Wikipedia, let's assume they know what they're doing. And saw, you know, when did it start to digress into this weird superpower thing? And it kind of happened really quickly. How did it get to, like, what is the trajectory of all of this? And it still doesn't make sense, but I have a better understanding now of when, you know, things happen plot wise, if you want to call it that, than I did as someone who just sort of popped in and out a lot and was like, okay, so now they can fly? Why? You know,
I'm going through the characters again, the character list on Wikipedia. And I know, folks, do not read off of Wikipedia during a podcast. It is what it is. Deal with it. Mayor Goodway is the mayor of Adventure Bay, who lives in the city hall and is one of the Paw Patrol's frequent callers. She can be very panicky at times and also works to outsmart Mayor Humdinger. That she is listed in Wikipedia under as a supporting character.
Yeah.
The lead villain, Mayor Humdinger, voiced by Ron Pardo. Mayor Humdinger is the mayor of a neighboring town called Foggy Bottom.
Ah, okay.
Who is the main antagonist of the series. He is the Paw Patrol and Mayor Goodway's biggest rival, where he is always coming up with new plans to upstage Adventure Bay and make Foggy Bottom better, which always get thwarted by the Paw Patrol.
For so some of it, a light plot.
Yeah, so there's a light plot. Light plot. And this, to me, the reason why I asked if about the two mayors and the two towns, I'm like, are they trying to teach kids politics in children's? seriously, I'm only asking the question because it, again, as I said earlier, I want my entertainment to entertain me. Yes, there needs to be things that do teach lessons and do whatever, but if you're throwing in mayor this from this town and mayor that from that town, I'm just waiting for the next election.
You know, I now that I'm trying to think, I don't think I've ever seen either of those mayors mayoring anything. Like, I feel like I've never seen them running or doing their job. Usually they're like competing against each other in some kind of basketball tournament or foot race, and Mayor Humdinger is cheating. And it seems that their whole job is to, like, well, Mayor Goodway's whole job is to panic and worry about her pet chicken and then participate in these, like, ribbon cutting things that don't have any use. And Mayor Humdinger's job seems to be, yes, to try to destroy Adventure Bay and upstage Mayor Goodway. But I don't think I've ever seen any of them being like, hey, the traffic's really bad in town. How do we fix this, guys? Like, no, they're not doing their jobs, at least not on camera. So I don't think it's to teach kids about politics, but I will say that there has been a very good, I have one excellent use for Mayor Humdinger, and that he is so classic as a simple villain that I have used him to explain to my son what a bad guy is. Like, so I guess in a way, like you talked about the good versus evil, you know, in Canada, we have a different political system. You guys have Democrats versus Republicans. We have liberals versus conservatives. And then we also have a couple other parties as well. The conservatives would be the Republicans, and I am absolutely not a conservative. And they have blue signs here. That's their thing. They have blue signs. The conservatives are the blue guys. And my son will be like, what's happening? Who are we voting for? And I'll be like, not the blue sign people. And he's like, what are the blue sign people? Why are they bad? And I'm like, they're just a bunch of Mayor Humdingers, honey. And then he immediately gets it. He's like, oh, they're Mayor Humdingers. We don't want to vote for them. And I'm like, yeah. So I used it to teach my son about politics.
There you go. I mean, I'm not trying to bring the whole political. I don't like talking. I'd rather talk about fake robots on a fake planet in the middle of nowhere that ends up blowing up and they have to come to Earth and live amongst humans than talk about politics. Ah, Transformers, you gotta love it. As I was reading the two things between, I'm like, wait a minute. They're mayors of two opposing towns. Oh boy, somebody go get the pulpit already.
I will recommend an SNL sketch if you can find it about Paw Patrol, because that's how ubiquitous it is that there is an SNL sketch about it. And it's basically about how this Mayor Goodway gets elected and like fires the entire police force and hires these dogs to like solve crime instead. And all the citizens are complaining. They're like, someone was drowning and they sent me a dog with a water boat. Like all of this kind of crazy stuff about like, our town is now being policed by these dogs. It's horrible. They don't know what they're doing. And like, who is this 10-year-old boss they have? Like, where are his parents? Shouldn't he be in school?
That's the crazy thing. Out of all the clips I watched today, other than the two mayors, I saw no adults with these children and these dogs. These children are running this Paw Patrol thing, really?
There are some adults. There's a captain. Captain Turbot is like a sea captain.
I know there are adults. I'm just saying in the few, maybe 7 or 8 clips and portions of episodes that I watched today, every time the Paw Patrol goes out, it's the lead child character and the lead dog character like leading the way for when the Paw Patrol go to respond to something. Look, the whole aspect of this show that I'm perfectly fine with is teaching kids about first responders and how important those people are in our lives as far as like the police, the fire, the EMS and the ambulance and all. Like, that's great. But man, where are some of the adults when these kids some of these kids in this show don't look like they're old enough to drive, and that's why you get the animals to drive, because at least the animals are 99 years old.
That actually is interesting, because I never thought about that maybe they're trying to teach people about first responders, and that would be smart. And I think maybe that's how it started, because again, the things that they were doing were things that you're like, okay, if there is a kitten who's lost, or there is, a whale who's caught in an oil spill in the bay, or, someone has to fix the lighthouse, like, who do we call? And we call these first responders who are represented by these dogs. That's not a bad idea necessarily. But then it gets into like, if the dogs are just rescuing space aliens and dinosaurs and stuff, that like nobody has that job. What on earth? Well, right. So like it really dilutes that message when you get into, insane land, which I think is where they go very often.
True. I will say, though, the giant purple dinosaur Rex or whatever his name was, that was getting out of control. It was whichever guy was the inventor, like, no, I don't want you to dance. I want you to walk forward. And then the dinosaur just went nuts, and his flamethrower breath started. That's why the fire pups come. And basically they shoot the water into the dinosaur's mouth to basically to ruin the circuitry. So it was more of this inventor did something and accidentally let the dinosaur like run amok kind of thing in the Paw Patrol. It wasn't because they were trying to insert dinosaurs into modern day or anything. It was a fake robot dinosaur. It might as well, if it wasn't giant and purple and Barney looking, it could have been Grimlock from the Transformers for all we know. So it was one of those things where that would be a reason to call the first response. Like, your fire-breathing dinosaur is out of control and he's about to destroy the town? We must stick our hose in his mouth and spray his fire breath with water so he doesn't kill anybody. I don't know. Again,
That's fair. But, you know, just so you know, they do insert that eventually that maybe insert real dinosaurs into the world. Actually.
Again, folks, I want to make this episode completely clear. I am not a parent. I just grew up on children's television. And yeah.
I'm just saying there's a thing. There's like a dinosaur world that they go to eventually. And there's a whole series called Dino Rescue, which is like a little subset of this Paw Patrol thing. So, yeah, they started with robot dinosaurs and then ended up with real ones. So I don't that's where they go. I mean, I think. Yeah, I just think that the nonsensicalness of it and the fact that it's this weird sort of good versus evil dichotomy is problematic. And there are better ways to do it. You know, there are so many shows. One of my favorites is called Octonauts. And it's a British series, I believe. And it ran for 5 seasons. And then they have a new version of it called Octonauts Above and Beyond, because originally the Octonauts were a team of underwater explorers. Again, these are all animals because this is for kids, right? So the head guy is Captain Barnacles. He's a polar bear. And they have Professor Shellington, who is, I believe, a bear. And there's like an octopus and a cat with one eye and a bunch of weird. There's also a turnip, like a literal turnip. He's a Vegemite. So that in and of itself is weird. But the premise of the show is that they answer rescue calls under the sea for various animals and creatures who need help. And it's all based in science. So it's like they will have to evacuate a bunch of animals from a place where they know there's going to be an underwater volcano. Mm-hmm. And it's very like or there's going to be flash freezing and they have to get whales out of the bay before this happens. Things like that. There's tons of adventure and high octane stuff, but it's all real science stuff that happens, and there are no villains. The villain is the event, right? The villain is like,
yeah, you have to stop this world ending. Like we have to plug the volcano kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Or we have to, it's the rescue itself. And they also created another series called Creature Cases, which I want to plug, which is really funny and clever. And it's kind of like a James Bond parody. And it's, these two, I think a fox and some other kind of cat wolf thing. I don't really know. They are on missions and they go out to investigate these cases that they're sent on. And it's all animal cases. And they've personified all the animals. For example, there was one where it was the case of the raging rhinos. And they went to this nightclub where these rhinos had torn up this place. And they tried to figure out like what happened. Why did these rhinos go crazy? But it's a real phenomenon that happened, mm-hmm. Obviously not at nightclubs, but what they're doing is they're creating a fake little fun world where they interview people and the bartender's like, I don't know what happened. The rhino was just drinking his drink and he went nuts. But they're actually talking about a real phenomenon. And they describe like, oh, sometimes in the wild, I will be very clear. I don't remember what happened or why rhinos rage. So like, don't look to me for real scientific advice, but these are real phenomenon that they're investigating and kids are learning about these phenomenon through these really fun devices. Right.
Yeah,
and there's no,
cool.
You know, the rhinos are kind of the villain in the beginning. Like, why did these rhinos go crazy? But you're really just solving a sort of a nature mystery. Yeah, it's not this simple dichotomy, but it's still silly and fun. And there's still tons of like adventure and action sequences. And I think, you know, there are so many shows like that that are really clever. There seems to be a line between shows like that and then shows where you have these villains who are over and over again doing these kind of crazy, similarly themed chaos adventures every episode. Right.
Right. So Octonauts, the original show, October 4th of 2010 to March 30th of 21. So it had a damn good run. And like you said, it had another new TV series spinoff. So I've scrolled past all the character names and I'm looking at the Vegemals. Vegemals are the half animal, half vegetable creatures. And I'm just thinking to myself, I do not want to eat a piece of codfish with radish in it. I do not want to eat a piece of halibut with a beet in it. Broccoli, yeah. Mackerel? Like, this is like, this is like Fear Factor type stuff here, man. Just no.
Yeah, I don't understand that part at all. But, I guess that's the thing that's fun about kid shows is it's not that you cannot have these weird elements. You can. You just have to set it up as a weird element. And then we all suspend our disbelief. And it's like, what are you doing with that weird element, right? Like when you watch Octonauts, you're like, okay, Vegemals exist. That's a thing. Weird. But that's a consistent thing, a quirky element of the show that just exists.
Yeah, no, and I'm just kind of like sitting here making fun of it. I'm not trying to, you know, whatever, but like, I'm sorry, a yamchovy, half anchovy, half yam. Look, you can keep the yams. I'll just take the cranberry sauce home from Thanksgiving. Thank you very much. Oh, boy. What other recommendations do you have? You said Octonauts. You said, what was the second one you said?
Creature Cases. It's by Creature the same Cases. Creator as Octonauts. Yeah, it's got 2 seasons on Netflix. I think it's like a Netflix original, so it probably is in the States. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it is. You all know classic Magic School Bus, right? That was like in 1990s. So there was the Magic School Bus Rides Again series, which only ran for 2 seasons, but it's really great, too. And it's... You know, sometimes kids shy away from older animation because they don't like the way it looks. So if there's any of that going on, this is a good alternative. And it's, I believe Kate McKinnon is the voice of the new Miss Frizzle. And it's not like a remake. She's Miss Frizzle's younger sister. And she shows up to teach. Miss Frizzle has taken a new job and she's a professor at a university. And so her sister comes to teach her old class and they go on adventures. And again, the adventures are all science, right? Like they're stuck in crazy situations, but it's all science. Spirit Rangers, 2 seasons on Netflix, and it is by all Indigenous writers. And it's about a bunch of Indigenous kids, I believe, who are kind of park rangers in a way. And they also have these, I just blanked on the word, secret identities as it's kind of superpowers based on Indigenous myths and lore. They turn into kind of these animals and they're protecting. Again, this is a lot of this is me trying to remember watching this show and what it was, but it's clever and it has that same effect where they're protecting something. There's adventure, but there's no villains. It's not that kind of show. Obviously, you know, there are lots of shows that are different that aren't super high adventure, like Doc McStuffins. You know, kids love that on Disney Plus. Ada Twist Scientist, that's another Netflix show that's sort of about science but more like based in the real world, even though it's animated. Storybots, which is kind of a hybrid show where kids learn things through these segments, but it's like these little cartoon bots that they get asked questions like, why do our eyes see? And then they kind of investigate and they're like real videos explaining that kind of stuff. Yeah, there's more of these as well. But for every one of those, there's also one of these shows where it's just kind of like these, you know, I'll get you Paw Patrol people. And you know what's weird is that so many of these villains, they're all after gems. Like, I know this is going to sound weird, but like my son is constantly talking about magic opals.
Okay.
What on earth are you talking about? Like, I think it started with Spider-Man and the Doc Ock character is female, sort of, I think, based on the Into the Spider-Verse character.
Okay.
And apparently she's always trying to steal gems. And this happened in another show as well. And I'm just like, what is it with these gems? What are these gems? That's like magic gems. But, you know, he's like, he's going on about a lot of gems, and this is like a thing where every episode these villains are trying to take gems and they have to protect the gems. It's a weird, weird thing. I don't get at all. Like, what is this? But it seems to be quite common.
Yeah. There was a book when I was a kid, and I'm trying to find it. There it is. It's behind me somewhere, but I know I ordered it off of somewhere. This is an old book. It was written by James Marshall. This was circa 1985. Miss Nelson is missing. Miss Nelson's class always acts up, especially when their teacher is absent from school. But after a week with their strict substitute, Viola Swamp, the kids can't wait for Miss Nelson to come back. So the basic thing with this is it was Miss Nelson all the time. She just put on a black dress and acted mean to the kid. She wasn't acting mean. She was more strict. But I remember this book like it was yesterday. Like,
wow.
Yeah, it was Harry Allard and James Marshall. And I'll have to take some – well, I can't take screenshots because it's a physical book. But I'll take some pictures and send them to you because it's another one of those, like, teaching – think of, like, Sideways Stories at Wayside School, that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
I don't know, man. Children's entertainment really has changed over the last 40 years.
It really has. Yeah. And I think it's hard to be a parent and to try to figure out, like, are you limiting things or are you teaching alongside them? Are you, like, watching it with them and saying, okay, I get we like this show, you know, trying to insert some of your own, you know, don't you think this is a little stereotypical or that kind of stuff into it? And, you know, they want to watch what all their friends are watching. Right. And, mm-hmm. and so it's challenging. Yeah. And I struggle between wondering whether it's just the perspective that's different. Like, again, you know, were we watching just as crappy stuff in the 80s? If you count all of the cartoons that we ended up watching, because those were just obvious place to sell toys. They were toys first and then they were shows. Right. So if you count that stuff, you know, has anything really changed, or are we just, do we have a lack of Sesame Streets? Are we just suffering from a lack of Sesame Streets? You know, I don't know. Like, there will never be another Sesame Street. So it's hard to say.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either. All right, folks, we are going to go to a quick ad break. We're going to come back to probably close this out right after this.
You're the new king.
I cannot think of a more horrible ending than this.
All hail King Grover.
Ooh. Nice fit.
No!
Do not lose your head over this, Netty baby. Now fetch me a cushion for my royal bottom. This chair is not comfy at all.
Yes, your fuzzy grace.
And bring a sweater. I think winter is coming.
Hello, geeks and geekettes. Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. I'm here to tell you about the DC Comics News Podcast, here every week to talk everything DC, movies, TV, comics, and everything in between. But don't just take my word for it. Here are a couple of our sponsors. Listen to the DC Comics News Podcast. It's audio justice.
No. It's audio chaos. These wackos are crazier than I am.
Well, maybe you're both right. Regardless, you can catch us on every kind of podcast platform. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and everywhere you find great podcasts. So, can I go now?
Let him go. He did everything you asked.
No.
Hey, welcome to the Last Comic Shop Podcast!
A comic book podcast that actually talks about comics.
Yep, each week we open the shop up and read and discuss a comic.
Sometimes we pair that up with comic book movies or TV shows.
Or not. Lots of times it's just comic books and sound effects.
Oh, yes. Definitely lots of sound effects.
So tune in on all the major podcasting platforms to The Last Comic Shop Podcast. Or check out our library of evergreen shows at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
Like science fiction? Of course you do, or you wouldn't be listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Well, the Marku 42's Universe Podcast is an award-winning sci-fi radio show that's been around for over 10 years. We cover everything from Doctor Who to the MCU to pop culture and everything in between. A new show drops on Tuesday mornings on the GCRN website and all of the major podcast platforms. So listen to the Marku 42's Universe podcast from the universe and beyond.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or geekcastradio.com.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Car. Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Hello, all sentient beings. Want the latest on everything going on in the Transformers multiverse? Check out the Transmissions Podcast Network. We've got weekly podcasts covering everything from Alpha Trion to Omega Supreme. From old school G1 all the way up to Cyberverse and beyond. And you don't want to miss Empire of Rust, the world's first and only Transformers live play role-playing game podcast. If you love Transformers, there's something for everyone at transmissionspodcast.com.
Discover a world of vintage and modern toys that's more than meets the eye with the Triple Takeover Toycast.
Hosted by toy writers and photographers Toybox Soapbox, 6-0 and TF Square One, this informal and chilled out series of discussions cover everything from vintage Transformers to Mask, Diaclone, Microman and more, be it nostalgic or current.
Whether you're a seasoned collector or a casual robot enthusiast, all are welcome.
Triple Takeover Toycast.
Well, the Paw Patrol saved me. I suppose a thank you is in order.
You and your kittens really made a mess.
We just wanted to win the Spotless Town Trophy. We're sorry.
If you're really sorry, you won't mind helping out a little.
All right, we are back here on this GeekCast Radio Studio 2009 crossover talking about the problems with Paw Patrol. Yeah, I can't say that five times fast. There's just not a way to do it. And children's television programming then, now, and forever, question mark? I don't know. Any final thoughts from you, ma'am?
I guess... You know, my final thought would be, well, I mean, obviously my first thought that led to all this was just constantly railing about how much Paw Patrol sucks. And that is still true. But I think it's just a bigger thing where I would just love to see more children's programming that is more focused on fun education that's well written rather than this kind of like crack for kids formula about villains and good guys that sells toys, you know? Yeah. And I think it's happening to younger and younger kids, this sort of like toy selling formula. I just hope we're in for a shift at some point. I don't know. We don't really have a lot of strength in public television anymore. So who's to say? But if you can avoid your kids watching Paw Patrol before they know what it is, just don't let them know it exists, because that's what I wish I had done. Go back in time and just not even shown them the photo on Netflix. Like, what's Netflix? Just keep watching those YouTubes of old Sesame Street. That's really my final thought. Only ever just watch classic Sesame Street. Just do it all day. You won't regret it.
I can agree with that. I wonder, though, like, what, because, again, I don't know. So, you mind if I say your son's, I don't want to.
Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah, sure. Of course. Right.
So, Jax is 4 at this point.
Yes, he is.
I remember when I was 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 in the 80s, I went from He-Man to Mask to Transformers to Turtles to whatever. And then I eventually ended up watching stuff like Cheers. And for as a child, Cheers, The Cosby Show, yes, I know the man is a monster, but the show taught me lessons. It is what it is, and all that. But I'm wondering now, with Jax being 4 years old, as he grows up, what kind of television is he going to want to watch? Or what would you and your husband be watching that he, like, I don't even know what that landscape would look like.
I mean, yeah, that's a good question because, you know, again, I also watched Shiro when I was six and I grew up to watch what I think are pretty intelligent television shows. So it's not so much that the shows are going to ruin these children. I guess it's that the shows are being made instead of something like Sesame Street. So like I did watch Shira and it was, you know, a little bit silly and no, it didn't ruin me, but I also got to watch classic Sesame Street. I also got to watch those shows. I had those experiences on top of the other experiences. And I think what's missing now is a lack of that diversity in the landscape, right? You know, if all you're watching is shows like Paw Patrol and kids don't get that experience of watching something like Sesame Street, and there is nothing that exists like it. Yeah, I just lament the fact that they are missing out on that kind of experience. You know what I mean? And I don't, maybe there's equivalent things out there on YouTube or different things. Maybe it's not through traditional television, it's streaming anyway, but maybe there are different media forms that they are interacting with or learning in the same way that we did with Sesame Street. But I don't know. I don't know where it is. And yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think it's going to make my kid grow up to be, you know, have poor taste. Let's hope not.
well,
but I
mean, you know, the kids learn from the parents. So as long as you don't, which I'm pretty sure you don't have a lot of poor taste.
Yeah, sure. I guess. I guess you're correct in that. It's true.
I mean, you know, it's like you teach your kid the difference between right and wrong. But like, again, we grew up with like McGruff the Crime Dog or the DARE program here in the States, you know, drug abuse resistance, all that. And who knows? I mean, as long as, you know, people steer the children who are the future of this world that we live in the right direction, then I guess nothing can potentially go wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
I think I just talked myself into a humdinger.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to end this one for now. Where can the people find you online if you'd like to have the people interact with you?
You know what? I am almost nowhere online these days. That's pretty bad. I used to give my Twitter handle, but like I just admitted that I don't tweet anymore, really. And my Instagram and Facebook are now private because I have children and I've learned you really shouldn't broadcast their faces to the world as much as I was doing. So stay tuned because I haven't really decided where my online presence is going from here and where what my next creative venture is. Yeah.
Well, I just joined Blue Sky, so there's that. And I'm not a person that wants to join any of these new social media things, but so far it's been an interesting experience. Not a bad experience, so that's good. So
I might be I might become a TikToker. Who knows? It's a good place to rant, so we'll see.
Oh boy. I can definitely envision that one. All right. Thank you for listening to us here on Geekcast Radio in Studio 2009. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there's several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. You can check us out on any of the major podcatching clients like Spotify or Apple and Google, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The network is still on Twitter. I am still on Twitter at Geekcast Radio for the network at It's ITSSTUDIO 2009 for Studio 2009. I am at TFG1 Mike. You can become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Geekcast Radio Network. You can also check out Studio 2009 podcast over there as well. We hope you enjoyed this episode and wish you'll join us next time when we will be talking about something. I don't know what Geekcast Radio is doing for the next one. It might be another. I've been doing a lot of. I've got friends that attend various conventions, and sometimes they are helping run the convention. So I've been doing a bunch of convention recaps here on Geekcast Radio. And then for Studio 2009, I think we're going to be reviewing Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. So for now, I am TF2 and Mike with
Jennifer Kaufman.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.